Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We are continuing our end-of-the-year 2011 McLaughlin-style awards. We're roughly about halfway through, and at this point, you can just picture us screaming at Eleanor Clift about her ridiculous choices for the year and other things such as that. And, Jim, we've covered a lot of ground, and now we get to some of the juicier stuff that we've covered in the past year. The worst scandal, the best and worst political theater. We'll obviously take them one at a time, starting with the worst scandal of 2011. Go for it.
A lot of very intense competition in this category, Greg. But I'm going to go with one that I think kind of got a little overlooked and that I think really does stand out as one of the worst of the year. And I'm a little bothered that it did not generate more outrage. We all remember Congressman David Wu, the Democrat from Oregon, who was saying increasingly strange things. Odd behavior on the campaign trail. He tried to go into a restricted area of an airport to greet people coming off a plane to vote for, you know, to campaign for them. He ended up resigning from Congress after apparently he had been sending out a photo of himself in a full-size Tigger the Tiger suit to staffers. The term cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs does come to mind in this. And I think that, you know, that's a problem in and of itself. What was really kind of fascinating was that his staff was convinced that he needed to enter a hospital for psychiatric treatment in the days before the November election in 2010. In other words, they were convinced that he was having a psychological breakdown. And if it really is a not just him, you know, being silly, but having a serious psychological issues, you'd hope that the man would get the help that he needs. But at the same time, they're doing everything conceivably possible to make sure this man got reelected. I mean, this man is, you know, casting votes. He has as much vote as your congressman and my congressman and everybody else. They pretty much were convinced that he was utterly bonkers. And that shows you the you know, that's a really loyal staff when they're perfectly okay letting somebody, they're enabling someone with serious psychological issues to cast votes and set policy for the United States of America. I just find it frustrating and baffling, and I kind of wonder, I hope these people are haunted by their consciences, that at some point, you know what, the letter after the name doesn't matter that much. You know, like, Greg, I like to think you and I would never really be all that enthused about a literally insane Republican being in Congress.
Right.
You know, and they says that they were worried about him. They were worried about his children. I mean, why are you enabling this? What is wrong with you people that you can't say, hey, you know what? Somewhere in this district, we can find another Democrat who can do this job as well as he can. And maybe it involves a little bit of, you know, we'd have to apply for new jobs with the new Democrat. Maybe it would be disputed trouble. But no, let's do our part to keep an insane person in Congress. Frustrating and disturbing. And I kind of, yeah, it sounds like after he won re-election, a bunch of them resigned. And I'll say, oh, well, you know, thanks for making sure he was still in a position to do damage to U.S. policy. Boy, you guys are real profiles in courage. So that's my nomination for the worst scandal of the year.
Yeah, good choice, and one, you're right, that did not get a lot of attention. And you bring up a good point. I was thinking that, well, their thinking was when they kept campaigning for him was that they know Democrats are going to take a beating, so finding another office to work in could be tough. But then when they resigned en masse right after he got reelected, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So mine is not going to be very original, but I do think it is the biggest scandal of the year, and that's Fast and Furious, this issue that has been getting more and more attention, thankfully, finally, from the mainstream media due to the grilling of Attorney General Eric Holder before the oversight as well as the Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives. Most of our listeners, I'm sure, are pretty well aware of it. But anyway, the government decided to walk guns across the border into the hands of Mexican drug cartels, essentially telling legitimate gun dealers, don't worry about the background checks here. This is all part of a government operation. We'll take care of it. Go ahead and approve all this. Well, of course, these guns got into the hands of the cartels. We lost track of them. Dozens of murders committed, including that of a U.S. Border Patrol agent. And now we learn later that there's perhaps a similar thing happening with millions of dollars from the DEA and the cartels. There's also emails back and forth in the administration about all of this being used as a means to impose further gun control by painting these reluctant gun dealers as somehow negligent of the law and so forth. This is just ugly. Eric Holder's complete ducking of any responsibility here has been pathetic, and we'll probably even hear much more about this and perhaps finally get some answers in 2012, but that's definitely my nominee for worst scandal of the year.
Another good selection. I think there are a lot of people, as much as they may be shocked and horrified by Wu, would say that that probably is a bigger one, and certainly one that certainly needs to be more entangled in the year to come.
All right, let's move on to best political theater, Jim. What do you have there?
I found this one a really tough category. I think, you know, when you think of political theater, one of the things that comes to mind is the debates. I think there were a lot of debates this year that were not that well done. I think that a lot of the questions were kind of predictable. I think the answers were kind of predictable. The time limits made it tough for candidates to draw contrasts among themselves. I certainly don't think the budget fights were particularly edifying or all that stuff. So if you had to ask me what was the single most entertaining moment in politics this year, I think it might be when Andrew Breitbart seized the podium before Wiener's vehement denial press conference his admission press conference in New York City. It was absolute Breitbart. He just goes up there and he pointed out accurately that he had been accused of forging the photos and all that kind of stuff. And he got to take a well-earned victory lap. And, you know, I don't say gloat would be the right term, but point out that the mainstream media just did, you know, has no problem repeating accusations and denials from Democrats. And they're just completely unskeptical of these folks. And they never give a conservative the equivalent benefit of the doubt. And so I found that was one of the few moments this year where you're like, you're calling up people, you know, saying, are you watching television right now? Get in front of a television right now. You have to watch this. So kudos to Andrew Breitbart. This seems to be his specialty, but I think this was a... I think the lesson of this will be you will never see somebody late to their own press conference again because you never know when Breitbart might be there. And, you know, it could turn into the Breitbart show at any given moment.
Yeah, it certainly could. My nominee probably isn't, in the end, all that good. But just given the inflated reputation that John Corzine has had for being this brilliant business leader, this great Wall Street guy came to the Senate and to the governor's office in New Jersey. Fortunately, the people of New Jersey found out before the mainstream media that there were some flaws in the perceptions related to John Corzine. But this whole MF Global thing, not being able to find over $1 billion of investor money, and watching this guy who, of course, Joe Biden said a couple years ago, literally was the first person he called to get advice on how to handle the lousy economy, shows you kind of how the cronyism works in the Democratic Party when this guy's track record long ago should have proven that he wasn't what his reputation cracked him up to be. And so John Corzine having to sit before members of both parties, having been subpoenaed and admitting he has no idea where the money is, definitely is a humbling moment and one that unfortunately came a little too late.
A very good selection, Greg. I you know, the rise and fall of John Corzine has been fascinating. This is a guy who effectively bought two offices in New Jersey. See, you know, was not a you know, in my dealings with him when I was writing for New Jersey papers, he wasn't a nasty man or you know, he certainly was. He wasn't a dumb man, but I certainly nothing special. Didn't quite understand why this guy had the reputation he did, and to see him. All of his flaws exposed to the world, and that perhaps he's not such. Look, this way, he made a lot of money at Goldman Sachs in the 1990s. You know what? A lot of people made money in the 1990s. The economy was booming. Maybe he's not the financial genius everybody thinks he is. So I concur. That's another good choice for you know, a good comeuppance to witness for all of us.
All right, on to the third martini for today's special awards. Jim, your nominee for worst political theater of the year.
I can sum it up in one word, Greg, car poopers. basically, the Occupy Wall Street crowd. Occasionally you'd see women in body paint that perhaps made this a more entertaining bit of political theater. But otherwise, I marvel at several aspects of this. One, I guess I'm not surprised to see broad-based expressions of frustration and fury. As I've said, we're in year four of a recession, so I'm not surprised by that. I think the amorphous nature of it is interesting. You know, I guess it shouldn't be that surprising, but it's interesting that they haven't coalesced around any one or two particular policy agenda items. I mean, you still get it's still the same anti-WTO crowd. You see people bringing up the Palestinians. You see people bringing up, you know, every issue under the sun, and that there is nothing cohesive about it. I'm kind of surprised that Americans are not recoiling more from this. I mean, the numbers have steadily dripped down, you know, from the initial support. But there seems to be this sense that they're well-meaning kids. And we've seen, you know, violence in Oakland, and we've seen them trying to shut down the ports on the West Coast. And, you know, at one point, I believe the preferred phrase I was enjoying seeing used on Twitter was that these were the Nazi-endorsed, lice-infested rape camps. and, you know, when you put it that way, it doesn't seem so warm and fuzzy. So... I just don't understand what the point of it is. I don't understand how they expect to get anything changed without actually articulating the changes they want to see, other than, life stinks. Life isn't fair. Give me money, rich people. You know, I don't understand really what they're doing, what the point is. And I've been more, you know, more rejected by the American public than it is a little bit disturbing to me. I think it just kind of shows that we may have become a nation of whiners. But we'll see what happens. Perhaps there's, 2012 will be a new year. The weather's getting colder. I think they're getting a little tired of sitting out there. Some of these parks have been cleared out. And so perhaps over time, people will look at Occupy Wall Street and the related protests and just kind of shake their heads and wonder, what was that all about?
A couple of weeks ago, I spoke with the former Louisiana governor, Buddy Romer, who has been unable to actually get into these Republican presidential debates since he doesn't poll highly enough. And he's been the one guy who's running for president who's pretty openly embraced the Occupy Wall Street crowd. And so I asked him, why are you different than the other Republican candidates? What is it about these people that you're embracing? And I swear to you, his answer was, they can smell. Now, what he meant by that was that they can smell corruption in Wall Street and Washington. What I took that as is, oh, so that's been the real plan all along. Apparently,
I thought it would be simply that they smell, period.
Yes. That's pretty much my personal takeaway from it. Apparently, he sees it just a little bit differently. My nominee for worst political theater belongs to a number of people, but I think at the top of the list on this one story is Sheriff Clarence Dupnik in Arizona, basically teeing off this whole idea that Republican rhetoric, crosshair targets on congressional districts are somehow responsible for Jared Loughner shooting up that crowd outside the Congressional Corner event that Gabby Giffords was having, killing several people, severely wounding her and others. Just this whole narrative that had no basis in reality that he kept perpetrating, MSNBC kept perpetrating, Democrats on the Hill kept perpetrating. It just kept going and really overshadowed what was an obvious tragedy and really politicized something that should not have been politicized at all. And I blame him primarily for it. And others certainly were more than willing to take up the baton after he dropped it.
I would concur with that, Greg. It's egregious opportunism. It's really kind of disturbing coming from somebody who's in law enforcement, which you would like to think would be nonpartisan and above the usual back and forth of politics. Your job is to enforce the law, and equal justice before the law. Scapegoating and trying to tie a terrible tragedy committed by a person whose thinking and logic cannot be grasped by many of us to say, oh, I blame this political figure is some of the most rank demagoguery we've seen. And it's kind of stunning how widespread and accepted that kind of accusation became in this past year. That was the worst, and it's a miserable note to end today on, Greg.
We've got more awards tomorrow, though, so cheer up, have another martini, and we'll be back at you tomorrow. Jim, have a great day.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.